Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bankroll Burners, the podcast for poker players who can't stop getting it in bad. I'm Mike.
And I'm Josh.
And we are here, as always, to bring you some recently played poker hands that we have botched and or played extra bad. And we're going to review them and run through the spots and think about each other's, think about how each other could have improved.
And speaking of each other, this is kind of a bit of a special episode because I think all our hands from today are going to come from sessions that we played together. I took a little trip to Jacksonville. We had some best bet hands and sessions together. We played a couple hands against each other, most of which were rather cooler-y, which, you know, that's life when you
yeah,
have two aggressive players.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a cooler when I owned you with Queen Jack versus Ace King. Cooler
yeah,
city.
That was sick. Sickening. Sickening when the maniac runs hot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, let's hop right into it. I'll go first. This is a 2-2 game, so we were both playing 2-2 at Best Bet Jacksonville. It's a $300 cap. It's eight-handed, which is something we don't talk about enough, but the encore max is 9, and 9-handed poker just is definitely worse than 8-handed poker. Like, there's so many more people, there's, you know, wow, there's one more person. But it does, like, yeah, affect ranges a lot. It affects, like, how many limpers and where you're raising from. So, it, you know, it just kind of means you see more hands in general when you're playing eight-handed.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I definitely notice a difference.
So, in this particular hand, we're 300 effective at 2-2. And in this particular hand was a little... bit unique. There were only two limps, and this is a very, very limp happy table.
I will say what was pretty unusual about our tables is, like, there were very few limped pots. There were enough players at the table who were, like, raising, so that was kind of nice, but there was still a lot of limping going on.
Yeah, and, like, it was a lot of limp calling and a lot of people, like, it was an interesting dynamic because if you raised and, like, the person next to at called, then, like, every limper would call.
Right.
But, like, not necessarily every limper would call. It was just once one person called, everyone else would follow suit, which is obviously a great game, but it is kind of a, you know, a game where you have to wait for your spots a little bit.
Yeah, and I also will say, you know, we've talked about this before, but, like, live poker players, there's one concept in poker that they have all internalized, which is pot odds. And they're all able to say, well, I'm getting the odds, so I can call with 9-3 offsuit.
Right.
Because I'm getting the odds, which is not in fact correct, but
right.
That's sort of a fun phenomenon.
Well, anyway, in this hand, there's two limps from the hijack and the cutoff. Hero is in the small blind, which is where I get all my strong hands, and I look down at red queens. So the trend continues.
You check.
What? And I must say, by the way, this 2-2 game, I almost open folded small blind just way too many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I did once, but I, you know, it didn't matter. And so I have queen, and I raise it up to 15. Probably could have gone to 20, but I'm out of position. I'm kind of good either way.
Yeah, I don't know. 15's fine over two limbs, I think.
And then the big blind goes ahead and calls.
Nice.
But only one of the limpers calls. The cutoff calls. So the hijack folds, the cutoff calls. We are playing three ways out of position here. A little information on the players. The big blind seemed like not, I wouldn't say solid, but he was like a little bit tighter than like much of the other table. Probably more like fairly tight, I guess, especially compared to the rest of the table. And the limper that came along, I have tagged in my phone as Terra Bad. Because he was like limping like every single hand and like calling no matter the amount raised most of the time pre-flop.
That's the dream, the 95% VPIP.
Yeah. And he was running like relatively hot, hence like the effective stack. He was like doing good. And of course it was a great table and he was a fun guy anyway. So we had a great time.
Okay.
So the flop is going to come out pretty bad for us. It's ace of clubs, nine of clubs, four of clubs. We have got, again, red queens, so I don't know, the overcard and the ace, plus a club is just not really ideal, or plus the three clubs, and we don't have one, it's not ideal, so we go ahead and check out of position three ways. I think this would be a real mistake to c-bet this board with our particular hand.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we have we first of all don't need to bet that board this board that often, and we have plenty of hands in our range we can do so with. So
Right.
this seems like a pretty fairly reasonable just check and maybe even check fold. Maybe.
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on like sizing and kind of dynamics. I check, the player behind me checks, and then the cutoff bets 50.
15.
15, 1-5, which is a third pot. So I decide to call and peel for this price, mainly because like the player behind me checked, so his hand can't really be that strong if he's checking after I check. You know, if the big blind had checked, or if the big blind had bet and the cutoff had called, I think I can easily fold
I think
this.
this is. I think it would be a mistake to call in that spot. Yeah, for
Yeah, but
sure.
I think here I think that the big blind's going to do a fair amount of folding, and he's not going to be that strong. He's going to be pretty capped when he does call. You know, might not even have an ace. So
Right. Yeah.
I'm kind of
No, I
okay
like this.
peeling here for this price.
I agree. I think you should call. So.
I call. But then the big blind also calls behind me,
Okay.
which is, you know, not great, but he could easily have sort of a one club type hand, maybe pair plus flush draw. So I'm still not overly worried about really either of their ranges with sort of this sizing and the big blind call.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about the big blind. I mean, that's a really weak play, is sort of checking after you check and then just calling, you know?
Yeah, like check over call is like really weak, right? Because if you like check and then like ra like ch check raise there would be like super strong.
Oh yeah, I mean, obviously you're snap mucking there no
Yeah.
matter what. But yeah, I mean, it's funny we say this because I was definitely in a spot where you remember this hand where the check over call and the dude ended up having two pairs.
Yeah,
But
sure. But that player
it
also
does
like
happen at these stakes when people just don't know how to raise or play even anything but very passively. But for the most part, this is probably a weak hand.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, if as we've said a couple times before, when you think about live reads, like if we have the live read that someone is weak, that doesn't mean they have a bad hand. Like that gentleman could have thought that his like medium two pair was a weak hand, and so it's just check overcalled. And
Right,
also, to
right.
be
So
fair, I'm pretty sure he like lip I
he
think he
doesn't perceive
limped.
his hand as strong. He doesn't perceive his hand as strong.
And to be fair, he might also just be someone that doesn't raise, because I think seem to remember that gentleman limp overcalling with pocket aces, so.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go.
Well, anyway, the turn now rolls off the five of diamonds, which is pretty nice to see. You know, it's a pretty safe card, assuming like neither player has an ace. It doesn't really change much, but I don't think there's any merit to leading here. This hand like just doesn't make any sense. So I check, and it checks around.
Okay. We may have the best hand here.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Yeah. I don't think it's all that. I mean, I think it's somewhat likely.
I
And
think
the
we have I don't know. If this goes check or if this goes check again, I think we win a lot.
Yes, I agree with that for sure. But now the river, I think, comes the single most interesting card in the deck, and it's definitely the big decision point on the river as it rolls off the Queen of Clubs.
Ooh.
So we make a set. But it also adds a fourth club.
Wow, that's really weird. I don't
Yeah.
really think we can ever be good, honestly, versus two villains, though. Like, that's just like. And if we are, there's no way we're gonna get called.
Right. I mean, that's fair, right? Like, could we bet like 20 and just like try and get called by a naked ace?
I don't hate it. I don't think you're gonna get punished by these at these stakes for doing that. You know, if you're planning to just like bet fold really small, like bet small fold to a raise, like I don't think most people will punish you unless you have a read that some player like might do that. So I don't hate doing that for some very thin value. I think it's certainly better than check calling, I would say.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it's into this also came sort of right on the heels of our discussion about how like sets are like unfoldable,
Yeah, but like
which is
that would be
quite
such.
interesting, 'cause like I feel like this is definitely a spot where the set is quite foldable.
Yeah, I think check calling here is pretty bad. Like, yes, on occasion, some dude will just own you, but like, that's okay. Sometimes you get owned.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm happy to maybe keep going through the hand at this point, but I decided not to bet because I was like, I mean, I'm against two opponents. I think heads up, I probably would go for like a small bet and fold to a raise. And I also kind of think that the other benefit to that actually is that you're pretty much never going to get raised except by the king of clubs. Like, you won't even really be put into tough spots where like your opponent might have a weak flush. Like, people are. Like, I feel like these are boards where live players just like way under raise. You know, even if someone has like the jack of clubs, they're probably
Right.
not going to raise a whole lot, which, by the way, would be the second nut flush on this board since the ace and the queen are out there.
So I actually think you could not only bet 20. I actually think, I mean, how much is in the pot right now?
There's like 90 in the pot.
I think you could bet a third. I think you could bet 30. I think you could get
Even
called by
against
Nate.
two opponents.
I think a Nate, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do, because sometimes I mean, for obviously if you get called twice, you're no good. But
Yeah,
like
yeah.
sometimes, like, it will go big blind fold, cutoff calls you with an ace.
Right.
That will happen sometimes. And sometimes you'll get called and lose, you know, but no one's gonna like make a sick move here. I don't know.
I'm not gonna get raised by like 10-9 with no club.
Right. So I don't know. I think it's fine. I do. I think it'd be
So
fine to bet small here.
yeah, I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense as I'm talking it out. I decided to check here and like evaluate, probably check fold. But then the big blind checks again, which I think is good because I thought he was kind of more likely to have like a pair and a club type hand, just based on like how he'd been playing and like his super weak line on the flop. And the cutoff, like, I don't even know if the cutoff would be betting like one club type hands like on the flop as a bluff.
Right.
Like, it's kind of hard to say. And the cutoff
I
goes
mean, maybe
ahead.
yes, like the king of clubs specifically.
And the cutoff goes ahead and bets 50.
That is cold.
Because I was kind of like, I initially like was just gonna like snap muck, but then I was like, I just like don't really think, I don't know what the cutoff has here that's like really strong. Like, I just don't think he has that many flushes. When he like checks back the turn and bet the flop, like I just don't think he's gonna be turning a lot of like he's not gonna be starting like bluffs a lot on the flop.
But what does he have that? But he's not doing this with an ace, though.
Right. I mean, that's true.
So he's not like value owning himself. So he's either complete airball bluffing, which means he was also complete airball bluffing on the flop and but didn't continue on the turn.
Which is possible, right? I mean, which is possible live where someone starts a bluff, they get called in two spots, they go, oh crap, I'm gotta give up. But then again, we check to him on the river and he's like, well, I mean, I have to bluff. Like that is a live bluff
It's
spot.
possible, but I think this is a losing call in the long run. I think this is most of the time a flush. Like, I agree that it is possible that sometimes someone's bluffing here and good for those players, but like, but going into two people on the river for a half, oh, about half pot, a chunky bet. I mean, $50 is a chunky bet at 2-2. People do view it that way. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, we're gonna get owned sometimes, but like, I just think it's fine to just fold here because like, how often is this just absolute air?
Right. I mean, that is the question. But I just kind of thought like all the other thing that I was kind of thinking is like if I call and like the big blind does have a hand with like a random middling club, he's gonna have to fold.
Oh yeah, I'm not worried about big. I agree,
Yeah. So I was just
but.
kind of like, well, if he's got it, you know, I don't know. It's a weird spot because I don't know that the it is try I see what you're saying. The cutoff kind of needs to be airballing twice.
Like, here's a question for you. Is your hand different than King Queen with no club?
I
Like,
mean,
actually, is
I
it?
think it is. Because I
Okay.
do, I think that we, because I think it is good to, like, beat any random, like, value spaz. Like, could he be doing this with two pair sometimes after the river checks to him? Like, maybe.
I very rarely see it on a four flush. I
Yeah.
don't think I've. I don't know if maybe I could count on one hand the times I've seen someone go for value with a non-flush hand on a four flush.
Right.
I don't think it's a two pair hand.
Yeah.
I don't really think your hand is very different than King Queen, honestly. But that's me. I mean, maybe you disagree, if you disagree, that's fine. That's just kind of my thing.
I don't. I mean, I think that's an interesting point, but I think that, like, I don't know. I also think that, like, someone might just, like, you know, not really think about value or bluff. Like, he might just, like, bet a random ace, like, for some reason. Like a tilt bluff, like, I'm no good now, damn.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen all that often. I do agree with you, but I think that at least that's a relevant point that might make our hand, you know, different than
King-Queen. Yeah, our hand is in some ways better than King-Queen, but, like... Okay, so what did you? So it sounds like you called.
I decided to call. Yeah, I've kind of decided I have. I just want to call here. I don't want to fold my set. The big blind like kind of grouses for a little bit and then folds. And the cutoff mucks. The cutoff says I missed and mucks.
Okay.
I show my set and the big blind says he folded the eight of clubs.
All right.
So
hey.
I don't know.
Nice. I mean, we always have. I feel like we've had this the last few episodes where I was like, I don't know, I just fold, and you were like, no, I hero call, and I was right. So
which did what? Hey, how many episodes? If you go through our backlog of episodes, you can see many times when I hero. I believe one of our early episodes was called "I'm Blocking Aces."
That's true. Yeah.
Because of a really interesting hero call that I elected to make.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. I only tend to try hero calling, like, in these spots when someone's line just really doesn't make a ton of sense. But I don't even think his line is, like, that weird. I mean, I think, I guess if your point is, like, live players don't turn one club hands into bluffs enough on the flop.
And, like, it kind of...
It's true.
And I feel like it has to be, like, the king of clubs. Like, this guy was not a guy who was betting, like, at all for value. This was another, this was also a gentleman who was very much slow playing all his value. Which is
so what do you think he was betting on the flop? Because he was betting a draw, apparently.
I don't know, but he said I missed.
Right.
So I don't know what he missed.
Right. I don't know either. Yeah. I don't know. He could have just been lying, but like,
I mean, that's true. Like it sounds to me like he was probably like, I don't know what I literally don't know what he could have had, like 6-7.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, nice call. I don't know. I would have folded.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair because I do think, like, I don't know. It's so such a weird spot. I feel like these four flush boards are, like, rare enough where people just, like, kind of don't know how to play them. And I guess in my experience, I just rarely see people, like, betting or going for value with hands worse than the nuts.
I think that's true.
And I guess I just don't give him credit for having a ton of king of clubs in his range.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to think, like, you know, what is he limp calling? You know, king jack off for with sure. The king of clubs, king ten off with the king of clubs. So there's eight combos. And then how many random airball bluffs does he have? I guess he only needs, what,
two? And a half. Did two, yeah.
So maybe you're right. Maybe it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, or maybe he just has a ton of king of clubs and I normally just get owned. Yeah. And maybe he would have gone for sick value with like a jack or nine of clubs, which by the way is definitely good.
Absolutely should.
Yeah, he should be going for value with like any Broadway club or maybe even probably any Broadway club when it checks to him.
Yeah. So, you know, but I don't know. I could be wrong here, and you could be right. So
just a weird spot. And this was I thought this was funny because we had literally just talked that afternoon about like how good sets are.
And how you should not fold sets. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I was definitely ringing in my mind.
Yeah, fair enough. So, all right. Well, I've got a hand here. It's a pretty interesting one. We're going to start this hand $360 effective at once again 2-2. And we're going to be in the low jack. And we're going to open it up to 10. It folds to us. And we get called by the hijack, the button, the small blind, and the big blind.
And what do we have?
We have ace four of hearts.
And then everyone left calls.
Except the cutoff.
Oh. Button, small... Oh, hijack. Hijack, button, small blind, big blind, call. Okay. So $50 in there right away. So already, you know, things are getting, the pot's getting big.
Yep. We are five ways to it.
And we're in the middle.
Yes. Not ideal.
Okay.
I mean, this is one of those spots too, where I will be checking probably ace. If I hit an ace, I will still probably be checking. I will probably be checking almost every board with right. this specific holding. Because there are not really any boards, five ways that are like bet 100s. So this hand is probably always going to fall into my check range.
Right.
So just a note.
Maybe if you make like trips.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. We don't make trips. The flop comes 9 of clubs, 4 of clubs, 3 of hearts.
Damn, running bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we make a hand.
Yeah. Blinds check. We check as planned. I assume you feel good about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially this board. Even if it was a board that we wanted to bet a lot of our hands, this would be like a great board to not.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the most connected board, but there's probably some nines out there, you know.
I guess it's worth noting that, like, we could bet, because, like, even if people do have a nine, like, we can definitely apply pressure. Like, our hand is actually an okay candidate for, like, starting a bluff, because, like, we have a lot of cards that give us equity. Like, we have a lot, we have backdoor combo draws. And, like, also we can just, like, rep a lot of overcards if our opponent does have, like, a 9x type hand. So, just worth thinking about, but I don't think we have to five ways by any means.
No, I agree. I mean, that's an interesting point. I think it is good to think about, you know, turning these hands into bluffs early on. But we don't.
But I would definitely snap check this and not even think about that in the moment.
Yeah, so. I did. I didn't really think about turning this into a bluff at the time, but I guess I could have, you know, fair enough.
Yeah.
I check. The hijack now bets 35. This is a player who can bluff. And I've seen bluff, but also, you know, could very well have value here. So I don't think the sizing means much from this particular opponent, to be honest with you. This is an opponent. This is Ronnie. If you recall, he's a great dude, big fan of his, but I haven't seen him. Like, I haven't picked up any sizing tells from him. So, yeah. You know, didn't really like think much of it. So, and the button now folds, the small blind folds, and the big blind folds. So it's now back to me.
Okay.
And we go ahead and call. Do you think we should ever consider raising here as a bluff?
We could consider raising here as a bluff. Again, I think we have an okay candidate, and this is a pretty tight player when faced with aggression. You know, and we'll definitely fold, like, a lot of hands. And we'll definitely fold a lot of hands if, like, an overcard does come and we're able to sort of leverage that. So I think we could consider it. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't know that I love check calling here, like, out of position against a large sizing. Because, like, we are allowed to start folding hands, like, to pretty large sizings, and especially multi-way. But like, if we're gonna fold some ace four, we do have the backdoor flush draw, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, just because I know this player can bluff, like, I've seen this player bluff into multiple
opponents. But like, before. Even if you're playing against like a GTO opponent, you're supposed to fold some pairs against large sizings.
Okay.
On the flop, like you know, it's kind of like, yeah, if your opponent like C bets like a third, you have to like call with like all your anything that like connects remotely. But if your opponent bets, like, pot or, like, 2-3-quarters pot, you're allowed to start folding, like, your worst, like, bottom and middle pairs. But I don't really think this qualifies, actually, because it is ace four and it has, like... You know, like, what would you have done if you had, like, pocket sixes?
I probably would call. I would have called. I don't know if that's right. It's definitely uncomfortable. It's probably, like... I mean, you could maybe call flop and just fold to any turn aggression.
That's true. He does, and especially in live, like where players are kind of less likely to sort of do these big multi-street bluffs and might give up and check. That's probably fine exploitatively. I haven't run this through a solver or anything, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, even if you're heads up, you're allowed to like start folding some of those pair type hands. Maybe not to this sizing, but to some sizings.
Yeah.
But I think you're, I mean, all that said, I think your hand is fine as a call. Or a probably raise. We have too much equity.
Yeah, I think a raise is interesting, but I think probably calling is mostly what you would do.
Yeah, and anyway. The stack size is already, like, it's also a little weird with the big bet, because, like, if we raise, we're probably setting ourselves up for, like, a turn shove.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's true as well. I also think, like, I'm thinking I'm behind here for sure. Like, I think, like, a lot of the time I'm behind, but I do have some, a bit, I think there are some play to be had.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing is like if you're against like a good opponent, right? Like against if you were playing like against a GTO opponent, or like
Like
if you
a
ran this through a
GTO
solver,
bot.
it might think you want to fold because you're often behind, you know, you're like total equity with like some hands. Like I don't even, you know, I don't, I can't think of any, you know, I can't think of any like great hands on this board. But you know, maybe if you have like another board where you have bottom kind of crap bottom pair, you might just want to
Sure.
start folding. But anyway, that's I think the call is fine. 120 in the pot, 315 behind, and we're off to a turn
Yeah,
with
so
devious intentions.
with devious intentions, yes, we're thinking that we're going to have to be making some moves. And the turn presents an what I would consider to be an interesting opportunity. The turn is now the three of clubs. So we pair the bottom card and the flush draw completes.
Okay.
And I have been trying to integrate into my game leading on cards that the pre-flop aggressor, that the previous street aggressor is likely to check back.
Right. Which I
That
think
is
is
something
good.
I've been trying to integrate into my game, both for bluffs and value. So
Good.
in this spot, I decide to use this opportunity to start a bluff with what they call the weak lead. So I go ahead and bet $40. I lead for 40
Well,
on
I
this card.
definitely like your sizing. I think leads should be pretty small in general, when you do take this line. It's an interesting point because, you know, I think that you definitely want to do some leading. Like on cards that you the previous street's aggressor may check back. I wonder, you know, if you want the card to also kind of favor your range to do that, and I'm not sure that this card favors your range. It kind of
Do you
depends
think?
on whether you think
I
your
don't know
opponent.
if it. Like, who has more flushes here is sort of an interesting question. Like, he. I don't know who has more flushes. I guess pre-flop, he probably would have more suited hands than I would. But once the action goes like check, bet, call, bet large call, I actually think it cuts down on his pseudo combos a bit. I think he's
Sure.
going to be checking a lot of. Especially live player is going to be checking a decent amount of club draws there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I also like I do think you also have like more threes, like if that matters. Although, you know, it may
I
just
mean,
be
he
that.
doesn't. He shouldn't have any threes.
Right. So
I should
maybe
have very
that. I mean, you
few.
should have very few, like you pretty much just have ace three suited of with, you know, so they're kind of two combos of that. But, you know, that's kind of worth thinking about also is you definitely have more threes. I don't know, maybe that's irrelevant, you know, now that the
Yeah,
club's out there.
I don't know that he would. I don't know that he'll give me credit for a three.
Right. So
But
maybe this makes sense as a lead in terms of what bluffs we should have. I mean, having a four is nice because it does cut down on his value.
yeah, I mean, we could also argue like, oh, you want to have a club here, but I don't have that many club one club hands.
Right. Like
That
may I mean maybe you have like ace king with like the ace of clubs.
that's it, basically,
Yeah,
right?
and the
And I
king of
would
clubs.
maybe lead here with ace king with ace clubs, but.
I mean, you could lead here with ace king.
Yeah, I might. I'm saying I might.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, but like, I also think that I would want to be leading here with any overpair, which I will check call some overpairs on the flop for sure.
Sure.
I mean, I think probably like jacks, I would probably do some check calling. Maybe even queens versus that sizing.
Right.
You know, aces and kings, maybe it would be more of a check raise, but I don't know. Well, maybe. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I guess the one thing that I'm thinking about is like stack sizes here, where, you know, if he calls, we're gonna have like kind of pot and a half behind. So would your plan be to kind of jam a lot of rivers? And like not just with this hand, but also sort of in a vacuum, like, you know, if you have a flush, if you have an overpair. You know, what's kind of your plan for rivers?
I was not planning to use an overbet sizing. I was planning to go about three quarters.
Okay, which is definitely somewhat exploitative, just because like there wouldn't be that much left, you know, like probably not enough to like fold to a jam in sort of balance land.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't know that we would be, if we just get called here, Are we allowed to overbet? Like, maybe.
I mean,
Maybe
yeah,
it
if you think, right, that that you kind of have more flushes here, and like we definitely have more overpairs. So like we probably do have a pretty solid range advantage on this board at this point, then maybe we are just allowed to like ship a lot of rivers, like especially kind of clean rivers. But even dirty rivers, like they're gonna complete a lot of our bluffs, and like our opponent probably doesn't have that many one club hands either.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, maybe so maybe I should be planning to overbet river. I wasn't considering it at the time.
Yeah, just thinking about it, you know, it's easy when I have the numbers right in front of me. And I don't.
Yeah, no, you're right. I hadn't thought of it, but you're right. I think I mean we have a little more than pot and a half behind, I think.
No, I think even less, right? If he calls, you'll be 200 in the pot, and they'll be like 280 behind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, yep. So yeah, no, then in that case, I think overbetting is great. Yeah, I think I didn't consider it in game, which dang, but yeah, I think that
I
is it.
probably wouldn't have either. It's hard when you're just looking at your chips and you have to actually put money at risk.
Well, but yeah, so interesting. But I was at the moment I was planning that I was going to take a chunky size on river, but not all in size. So we do lead for 40 here, and villain calls.
Okay.
Which I didn't really expect. I don't usually expect folds to this move on that street. I
Right,
think we
it's kind
played
of like it's kind of
some
like
folds from like, you know, hands that were just taking a stab, which is fine, but you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like raising donks. You don't expect to fold on the flop necessarily, but you kind of do expect to start getting folds if you continue with your aggression.
Right. So the river is the 10 of spades.
Okay.
And I don't know, what do we think about this card? Like, does this card change anything?
Well, I mean, it doesn't change anything kind of like nuts wise. I do think our opponent has a definitely has like more 10-9 type hands.
Sure.
So, but I don't know that that's actually relevant because like it doesn't 10-9 doesn't actually beat anything that you rep. Like really his hand strength is unchanged, even if he does have that particular hand, so it's probably a pretty big brick.
I think so. I think that's fair. So, yeah, I go ahead and I bet 135.
Yep.
So, yeah,
You're kind
like
of
we said, I
sticking with
think
the
overbet would be.
two-thirds plan.
What's that?
Sticking with the two-thirds plan.
Yeah, I think overbet is better, but I do go with 135, and we get absolutely snapped by Queen Nine.
Offsuit?
Yes, Queen Nine with the Queen of Clubs, actually. So,
Okay, wow.
yeah.
It's like
So.
that's like a good, it's like a GTO call right there.
Yeah, no, we got owned. But yeah, hat tip, Ronnie. But it's interesting. I wonder if overbetting gets the fold. I don't know.
It's also interesting to think like I bet like if like you ever like talk to like Bart about this hand from Crush Live Poker, he would be like I wouldn't be surprised if his sort of line of thinking was like you should bet like 135 with value and take like a jam line as a bluff because you're just gonna get called so little when you jam.
Sure.
Like
Yeah.
I wouldn't be
I hate
surprised if
doing
that's.
that. I hate doing that, but that's the reason. That's why Bart wins at poker and I don't.
Yeah, I hate doing that too, but it's like, you know, that's how you make money live is you just play like disgustingly unbalanced and bet your hand and the players still don't adapt.
Yeah. Speaking of Bart Hansen and Crush Live Poker, Josh, by the time this is out, it will have already happened. Josh is going to be on Crush Live Poker's call-in show. We're very excited for that. So make sure to tune in. Well, I guess you
Make
can't
sure to
tune in, but
tune in yesterday.
maybe they'll make a cutout of it. So
Make sure to tune in yesterday.
make sure to tune in yesterday. But yeah, it's pretty sick. So
Yeah,
yeah.
really looking forward to it. We've of course both watched a lot of Bart and have been waiting to get on and get to get dissected, get our play dissected by the master.
Yeah, Bart is a legend of the game. We're both big fans, so. All right. Well, that's that hand. If you've made it this far, please like the video, comment, subscribe, do all the things, and we really appreciate it. It helps the channel out. And let's move on here to Josh's second hand.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a banger, for sure. We're starting this hand 315 effective, 315 once again at 2-2. This is going to be a hand that's even weirder than the last one. And first of all, there is a straddle on in this hand, so I am actually in that straddle. All three games that we played, the straddle was on intermittently. Two of them were better than the third. But a lot of straddling, a lot of action. So shout out Best Bet Jacksonville.
Yeah, great room.
Great environment. And this is going to be another weird hand as it folds all the way to the small blind.
That doesn't happen.
Which is unheard of. And the small blind raises to 15.
Okay.
And the big blind folds, and I elect to defend my straddle with 10-9 offsuit, having learned nothing from last week.
Nice.
Although it is a bit of a different situation, but, you know, just let me have my moment.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Okay.
So, just quickly adjusting the stack and pot sizes, and the flop is going to come out pretty darn good. 10-9-6 rainbow. 10 of clubs, 9 of diamonds, 6 of hearts. So we flop top two.
Say it one more time.
10 of clubs.
10 of clubs.
9 of diamonds, 6 of hearts. We have got 10 of diamonds, 9 of hearts, so no backdoor or anything. But we do have top two pairs, so who needs backdoors?
Right, exactly. Okay.
And the small blind is going to start by leading out for 20.
Okay.
This is kind of the first big decision of the hand. I mean, what do you think we should do here? Call or raise?
There's not a whole lot. I mean, I guess, well, let's think about this. I mean, you always want to think about, like, how dynamic is the board when you decide whether or not you want to raise with your two pair. I will say this is a fairly dynamic board.
Right.
But it's not a dynamic necessarily, like, that. There's going to be a lot of cards that bring in straights. What's going to happen is, like, top pair is going to change a lot.
Right.
Which I actually think is going to incentivize you to, because you're not really worried about getting beaten, but you are worried about maybe having your action killed. I actually do like a raise here to sort of, because I think if you call, you know, he might, and then an overcard rolls off and it goes like check bet, he might, you know, you might fold. You know, and then that's unfortunate. So,
yeah, that's fair. I think, I mean, hopefully, like, with him being the preflop aggressor, like, if it goes bet call and overcard rolls off, like, he will. And this was, I will say, this was a much more thinking player than, like, the rest of the table. Mm-hmm. This player was, like, pretty, I mean, and when I say that, I mean, he was not limping. He was doing a lot of raising. That's kind of the only heuristic I had. But that's not a bad heuristic for an intro level. You know, is someone thinking about the game or not? So, you know, I would think that if, like, a king rolled off, he would, like, tend to rep that card a fair amount.
So you're saying, like, maybe if he's starting some kind of bluff, you can just sort of call down?
And I was also thinking, like, you know, against a small bet, like a 1/3 pot bet, I would definitely raise here. But what I basically settled on is, like, his bet is on the larger side, which I did not expect, because I do think this board kind of favors me as the caller.
I mean, blind versus blind is weird, but yeah.
Maybe. Like, I should have all the 7-8, for example, and he probably does not.
Okay.
Like, maybe he does. Maybe he should, and it's kind of impossible to solve, and I did try and run this hand through the solver, and I was like, well, I mean, it doesn't really do straddles, so, you know.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I don't know.
Our solver does not do straddle. Yeah.
Yeah. Our cheapo solver does not do straddle. So anyway.
If only we had more bankroll, we could afford a more expensive solver.
If only there was some way to avoid to get that, huh?
Yeah.
So okay. So basically, based on those factors, and also there not being a flush draw on the board, because I think that's also, like, that would make the board, I think, significantly more dynamic. Like, if there were, like, a front door flush draw, I'd be a lot more inclined to raise to try and get value now from those types of hands. And also, that would really introduce a lot more action-killing cards.
Sure.
So, I guess between all those, I do decide to call. But, I mean, I do like a raise as well. I don't think by any means it would be bad to raise here.
Yeah, I think it... I'm just worried about, like, trying to get our value now before things get kind of... less attractive. But of course, if we think villain is going to be bluffing a lot, then I definitely don't want to raise.
Right. And I guess I don't know. I don't recall really seeing the villain like show down any big bluffs, but it's kind of hard to tell from like just a couple hours playing.
Okay.
But I see your point. It might just be good to like, and it's also weird because if we raise here, like we won't be able to get the money in on our turn anyway.
Sure.
Probably. I don't know. I guess we could just like go max greed and like raise to like 100 and then jam turn.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. Okay, but you can always raise here and then make like small bets on turn and river. You are allowed to do that just to get the money in. So.
Right. So. Okay. Yeah. I think that's probably good. But I decided to just call here this time. I'm the hero. So 70 in the pot and 280. And I guess when we call also, it is going to be kind of harder to get the money in. It's worth noting. So my argument is a little self-defeating.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that there's, I think there could be some, if you were calling, like if you had a bluff here, like if you had a float, I don't mind waiting till the turn to make your move. So in that way, like, perhaps you would want to wait on the turn to make your move with value. So what's the turn?
So the turn is not an action killing card. It's the four of spades. So it completes the rainbow and it is a disconnected undercard.
Okay.
But now the small blind checks.
Interesting. This check from a live player is usually going to represent like giving up for the most part.
Right.
It could represent a second pair type hand as well.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's often going to be giving up. I don't know that it's necessarily like as polarizing as it kind of is, in sort of optimal land.
Yeah. In theory, this is supposed to be a fairly polarizing play where, they're checking a lot of nuttish type hands and then also like their give ups. What I think it's much more likely is this is sort of a weak range where you've got a lot of give ups and then you've also got like second pair middling sort of hands. So obviously these weak hands aren't going to call any bet at all. Right. They're like complete give ups. But I wonder I would like, if I were you, I want to put second pair in about as tough a spot as possible. So I'd be looking to make a pretty large wager here. Also, because given that the turn was a brick and you just called flop, you don't have that many. You don't want to bluff this card that much because it sort of doesn't make a ton of sense. So we're not really going to be betting here a lot in general. So I do want to use a pretty big sizing.
Sure. I think that all makes sense. And as I'm thinking also, like a polarizing check here, like I wonder if you're supposed to check here sometimes with like over pairs. Probably not. But maybe, like, I don't know, in that kind of also lends itself towards betting big to like get value from those hands as well.
Definitely. Yeah.
And that's what I decided to do. I bet 50.
50 into 70?
Correct. I think I could have gone a titch bigger because it isn't quite the right geometric sizing.
Yeah, I'd go a little bigger. But
I think actually potting it would have been correct for that sizing.
And I like that too because it's really like putting a lot of pressure. So.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a spot I don't think where you want to overbet, certainly, but right. I think going pot is if pot is geometric, then I would go pot.
Yeah, I think that's right. I was trying to estimate the geometric based on his stack and, didn't get it exactly right.
Okay.
And he thinks for a little bit and then calls.
Okay.
So there's now 170 in the pot and about 230 behind. So like pot and a third.
It's a little awkward.
It is a little awkward. Yes, exactly. I mean, I definitely could have gotten that extra 40 bucks in and we would be in a much cleaner spot.
Yeah. Okay.
And the river rolls off a pretty interesting card. It's the Queen of Diamonds. So final board here, 10, 9, 6, 4, Queen. It ran out of rainbow board. There were no flush draws possible. Hero's got 10, 9 offsuit. So we've got kind of, we flopped top two pair. And at this point, we've got kind of middle, good two pair, but no longer top two. And small blind checks again. And this is really where I think I went pretty deep into the tank, even live. And still kind of thinking about it, I was kind of not sure what sizing to use here. Like, because I think I definitely need to bet this. But this card is going to be pretty, like, probably better for my opponent's range. He's got a lot more hands, like Queen 10, Queen 9. I guess that's pretty much it. But the card is definitely better for my opponent's range.
I do not know if I agree with you, simply because I actually think you run into a lot of queens here. Like, a lot of your bluffs on the turn and floats on the flop and bluffs on the turn contain a queen. Queen Jack, King Queen, Queen eight.
Sure.
So, and you don't have ace queen here, obviously. You three bet that. Or like, queen six, for example. So I think this might actually be a much better card for you. I don't know.
Well, it, I mean that that's I think that's a really good point that like we kind of run into pairs a lot here. But I don't know that those pairs are like gonna be good a ton of the time. Like
Really?
I
Why?
don't know. I just don't know that like our opponent is gonna like check call like a pretty hefty bet with like a nine all that much.
But a 10?
Yeah, definitely a 10. I mean, yeah, our opponent could definitely have a 10 like Jack 10. But I think our opponent should also have more like Queen 10, I guess specifically. Queen.
Interesting. I guess, like, I mean, look.
I mean, I
Are
would
you worried that
bet a
you are you
queen.
worried about like being not good here a lot?
No, I'm not worried about being not good here a lot. I'm basically thinking with my so with a queen, I mean, I think I don't I think it would I do think it would be thin to shove like Queen Jack here.
Yeah, okay.
I think it would be is what I'm getting at with basically that. But with this hand, I was kind of, I was not really I'm not concerned that I'm beat all that much. I'm thinking if it's too thin to shove.
Well, you can think about having multiple river sizes here. I agree that, like, with a queen specifically, shoving is probably not great. You probably have some type of two-thirds sizing, maybe, that you would take with a queen, or maybe half pot, something like that.
Yep.
But the question is, do you have an all-in sizing at all? The thing is, I think he has a lot of 10x as played, and I do want to go all in versus, like, I want to get the max versus 10x. Like, I almost think, like, maybe it's not too thin to shove with the queen now. I'm almost talking to myself. But
Right, I mean, maybe.
I certainly think having an all-in sizing here where, like, he really can't have any strong hands as played besides specifically queen 10, which is like, he does have, I guess, a good number of combos with that. I guess there are nine possible combos if you didn't have a 10.
Right.
And if you do have a 10, then there's only six possible combos versus you can have actually a lot of two pairs here as played. So I actually don't hate shoving your two pairs here.
But what and what about a queen? Because now I wasn't even thinking about like what if I had Queen Jack here, right? Because like obviously you make a great point that like you're absolutely right. My hands like Queen 8 and Queen Jack and King Queen are probably going to play similarly up to this point.
Right.
So, is that too thin, is that too thin to rip it? It's like a kind of a sick sh really thin. It's very,
Yeah.
very thin.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really understand. I can't really think of a good reason. Well, actually, you are blocking less queen 10. That's a reason. If you don't have a 10 yourself, he can have more queen 10.
But if we have a queen, then it's the same.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm really dumb. Yeah, I guess I can't really think of like a good reason why you can't just like rip here with a queen. If you can rip with 10-9, why can't you rip with a queen? I guess, like,
Yeah, I guess I was thinking like he
it's pretty
might.
nasty. It's pretty nasty, but maybe.
I guess I was thinking like he could play over pairs this way.
But not kings.
I mean, maybe like aces or kings. Like
Maybe.
I think maybe like he could check aces. Like it is a pretty scary board.
I think most live players won't.
Right. I mean, I think that's fair. That's just kind of what I was thinking at the time. And now I'm kind of thinking about with the queen. It's like, you know, does, you know, how do we play the one pairs? But I think, like, you may be right. We may just be able to rip here. I mean, that means we need, like, a lot of bluffs.
Yeah, I also think, too, if you think about, like, you messed up your sizing, quote-unquote, on the turn. Like, if you actually had gone geometric, meaning, and you had potted turn, I think jamming here with a queen is, like, simply mandatory.
Because it's just a pot. So,
right. So I think it's like it would be a very large mistake to not jam with a queen. If so, like when you really think about it that way, I think you should be jamming queens. So right. You should be jamming this hand too.
Yeah, I mean, I think okay. Well, that's fair. Well, I do jam. I did jam. I basically decided it's just too nitty to not just rip it here. Like
love it. Okay.
And villain just tanks and tanks and tanks for quite a long time, and then eventually reluctantly calls. And I announce the two pair, and he mucks.
Sweet. Well played.
But I just, I just don't know, like, what he had. That's why I was kind of thinking, like, it would be really weird if he, like, called. It's so tough to call a jam with a 10 here.
Yeah. But that's why, I mean, that's why we use these sizings. You know, our goal, you know, we want to be, like, the solver likes to put people in spots, you know, mm-hmm. and that's kind of like, I mean, I guess speaking for myself, that is how I try to play. I like try to put people in these spots as much as possible.
You definitely put people in spots.
Yeah.
So, sometimes they're fist pump, snap, call spots, but they're spots.
Yeah. Oh my God. We had a hand this weekend that is going to traumatize me for life, where I just ran the absolute sickest bluff of my life and villain just rivered a boat like a sack. So anyway.
Well, let's not dwell on that and let's move on to the last hand of the night.
Yeah, last hand of the night. So this is a hand that we played then the last night we all played together. And this was a hand I did run this through the solver. The solver didn't give me this hand. So you know, I had to add this particular hand into the combos the solver allowed, so you know, you can think of that what you will. This hand begins with a low jack open to $10. And we are sitting, and the low jack has a stack of 210. We cover. And so they make it, so they have 200 more. And we are in the cutoff with ace three of spades. We make it $30. And it folds back to him and he calls.
Okay.
Good.
Well, I was just thinking, I know we were kind of theorizing for a little bit about why the solver just kind of didn't want to do this, but I don't know that I love three betting with like a small suited ace when someone's that short. Like that could be one, because I know you like to say, and I think it's very, very good point, that when you have like a suited ace, you really want to be able to play sort of a three street game. Mm-hmm. And it's unlikely that you'll be able to do that.
I agree.
So maybe that's one reason why maybe, you know, we should cut down on some of the combos. But of course, we're not here to knit it up or be the preflop police. We are like we are like the preflop criminals.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. Yeah. No, we definitely play too many hands. So anyway.
So I just had that thought as I was looking at the stacks. You know, like the SPR is already three.
Right. I agree that this is probably negative EV. So we
make it 30. Bankroll burners in a word.
Yeah. Welcome to bankroll burners. It's negative EV. Need to not do this with a lot of small suited aces. The solver is doing a decent amount of three betting with, of course, ace five suited. And it is three betting ace five suited about 75% of the time. It's three betting ace four suited about 50% of the time. So it is doing a little bit of this small ace three betting, but that's it, you know. So as we start to widen that out, you can imagine this gets kind of not great. But,
it gets upset.
Yeah. Okay. We are heads up, $60 in the middle. And the flop comes ace of diamonds, eight of hearts, four of hearts.
Ace 8-4, two hearts. We've got ace 3 of spades.
Correct.
Okay.
So I'm not at all displeased with that. The villain goes ahead and checks to us, as we would expect him to do. And we bet $20.
Okay, I think that's pretty standard.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we always want to use a small size on ace-high boards. We could even go 15 here, certainly.
Yeah, but I'm fine with you. Yeah, I mean, if we use 20, we still have sort of enough behind to play two more streets. So I'm pretty happy with this.
Yeah, and the villain does call.
So. Okay, all seems straightforward so far.
Yeah, and the turn is where I think is like a pretty critical decision point of the hand here. Okay. So the turn comes now the five of diamonds. So it brings the second flush draw. It's kind of a, I mean, it does give us also a gutter. And villain now checks. And I'm wondering, and so I guess like the real question is here is like, should we bet this hand?
Right. I guess, you know, is what you're thinking, like, if we were to bet this hand, given the nature of the board, we probably should be taking an all-in sizing. Like, if we bet this board. We should probably...
Well, I wonder if in a three-bet pot that's still true, given, like, there aren't a lot of flushes available, especially to us.
Right.
Well, I mean, obviously, no one can have a flush. There aren't a lot of flush draws available.
There are zero flushes available.
Yeah, there's no flushes available. There aren't a lot of flush draws available, so I don't know that the double flush nature is that important because it's three-bet pot, but I don't know. I wasn't really sure in-game.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me, too, just because of, like, the stack sizes. And it's like, you know, yes, it's a three-bet pot. Now it's, like, super short. Like, this is kind of, you know, it's only a pot and a half behind. Do we just, like, if we were to bet this board in a vacuum, you know, would we want to jam? Do we want to deviate from that? I mean, if the villain is sort of more, like, stationy, do we want to kind of go, like, geometric and go smaller and just, you know, try and get three streets out of our small ace or consider checking back the river on scare cards / folding to a donk?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think... I didn't have any reads on this villain, first of all. It was very early in the night, so I can't say that. But I wasn't really sure. Like, I guess in my... If this was a single raised pot, certainly I think we'd want to be taking a pretty big sizing on this board. Like, probably an overbet type sizing. And we probably wouldn't use this hand, I would think.
Right, this hand's probably a decent check back.
Yeah.
Because it can also call a river bet a lot.
Right. But I do wonder if just because it's a three-bet pot, if, like, are we, like, do we want to try and go, like, three small streets, like you said?
It's tough to get called by worse. Like, villain would really have to, like, not believe us and call us with, you know, basically a pocket pair.
Right, right.
So maybe can we even get called on three streets, or should we check here and then try and bet the river, you know, if everything misses?
Sure. Yeah, that's possible, too. Like, you know, just kind of not resign ourselves to kind of, like, this is not a hand we want to play stacks with, basically.
Yeah, and especially, you know, when you kind of bring up the point that you definitely don't have that many flush draws, your opponent doesn't have that many flush draws, but, you know, so maybe we can kind of, but maybe we can still, like, bet kind of chunky on the river, especially if everything misses, and just, like, you know, get called by someone who thinks we missed.
Yeah, if villain checks river to us, if we goes check, check, and villain checks river, like, that's pretty weak. So we could reasonably, like, try to put those hands in a tougher spot by betting reasonably large. Like, probably not all in, but, you know.
Yeah.
So what's interesting here is the solver is betting only about half the time. And it's taking a small sizing. So it is kind of using that like...
How much?
40%.
Because that may... I don't know if the solver has the exact pot sizes. Because sometimes... Because, you know, the big blinds go all wonky. But is that, like, a geometric sizing? Or is that not quite geometric?
Well, let's think. What's the SPR here? It's
1.6. Because, like, if I'm looking at it right now, it's basically half pot would be geometric based on this.
Yeah, so it's probably trying to go geometric. This solver does not have half pot as an option. So it's probably trying to go basically as geometric as it can.
Yeah.
And it is actually betting our hand a decent amount. But it is betting ace three suited, but it is not betting ace three of spades at all. So it's betting ace three of hearts, which I actually find pretty curious because my intuition would be to check ace three of hearts.
Right, and maybe bet ace three of spades to get value from the different flush draws.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, but I guess, like...
I think that's curious.
But I guess the thing is, like, ace three of hearts doesn't really block any of our opponent's flush draws. Because, like, We actually don't want him to have the Ace of Hearts because all aces either beat or chop with us.
True. I guess, like, his hand, it's irrelevant in terms of blockers, but I guess, like, you know, if it goes, like, if I bet and he jams, well, I guess, like, I'm fist pump getting it in, probably.
Yeah, yeah, you're just snap calling with Ace 3 of Hearts.
Right, right, so that makes sense versus, like, with, my, like, I actually think it's probably a disaster if we get check jammed on with this holding.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, that, like, if we bet, like, half pot and he jams, like, it just is, it's really bad.
Yeah. So I actually thinking of, that actually makes a ton of sense. See, sometimes the solver makes sense.
Thanks, solver. You're so smart.
So okay, yeah. I did check. I did check in game. I just really was kind of like, I wasn't sure about the spot.
But that's a good point, and something that I think we've been bringing up a little bit recently, but something that I definitely don't think about enough is, like, the sort of solver approved, the often solver approved line of checking to protect your equity. Like, checking yes. back to protect your equity is something that I think people don't think about a lot, and I definitely don't think about enough, is, like, when your hand has showdown value and equity, you know, and you think it's actually decent showdown value, it's not like bottom pair and you're pretty sure it's no good, you know, you don't want to face a jam, because, like, you will, you either have to, like, call with, like, exactly the right odds, which is not really something you want to be doing in live poker all that much. Like, you know, you have to, but it's, yeah, like,
it's not ideal because you're never really sure about your opponent's ranges.
Well, when, like, when you have, when you feel that you have an edge, you shouldn't be looking for spots that are even.
Right.
Also. And, or you have to fold and give up all your equity. And we have, like, a gutter here. Like, we have two clean outs to what are almost certainly the nuts.
Right.
And we also have, like if we hit a three, we are probably good. If we hit, like, you know, there's, we just have so much equity. It would definitely be a disaster to get jammed on. Like, we might just, I don't even know what we'd do.
I think we'd, like, throw up and call, but that's not what you want to be doing in live poker.
Right, and that's a, yeah.
So yourself in a spot, so.
Just something to consider. Right, I've put myself in many spots. And sometimes you also bluff and then realize you have to call. And that's right. Also bad.
That's the worst outcome.
So I like your check back. Nice check. Good job adhering to the solver.
Yeah, well, I had it, you know, it's, I'm just kind of, they call me the human solver.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the river, Mr. Human Solver?
The river is the deuce of spades.
Oh, you sack.
I'm a sack. So we make
a straight, and both flush draws brick.
Correct. And villain thinks and checks.
Okay.
So we're going to bet.
Yep.
How much?
I mean, I think if we weren't kind of, like, if we're not, I don't really want to take, like, a split sizing here, just because, like, we don't have that many hands that want to, like, jam. So I probably would just bet, like, you know, 2-3/4 or whatever you were kind of planning on betting if you missed and the river checked.
Okay, I think that's reasonable. Why don't you want to have, like, you don't think we jam it? Like, you wouldn't want to jam ace-king here?
I mean, I don't... Like, what are we trying to get value from with ace-king?
A worse ace.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I don't know. I think that split sizings... I mean, I do think that split sizings first are just very hard to implement for humans also.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe it's okay to just do a jamming. And, like, the other thing is it's okay... But the other thing is it's okay to, like, exploitatively split your sizings. You know, like... Just because it's live poker, you're not going to get taken advantage of. And, like, this, you know, every given board will never happen again.
Right.
So, like, you know, if you wanted to, like, jam these types of hands and, like, bet some amount with, like, ace-7 suited, for example. You know, sure. That would probably be fine.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my thought was just, like, he can, like, as played, he never has a strong hand.
Right.
So, like, that was why I was, like, my thought, like, immediately was, I always try to evaluate these spots, and I don't always succeed, as we learned in the earlier hand, but I do try to remember to evaluate spots to see if we can overbet jam. And I guess my thought was, like, well, he just doesn't have, like, anything strong here. But on the other hand, you know, like, he can have, like, ace-10, you know, for sure. Right. But, like, that's probably the strongest hand he can have. Maybe, like... I guess he can have ace-jack. Maybe some ace-queen.
Probably ace-queen. Maybe even... Honestly, maybe ace-king. Probably not, though.
You would hope not, but possible.
Yeah. I see your point. So you're kind of thinking, like, are your opponent just has no strong hand, so you could just, like, jam here a lot to put max pressure?
Yeah, that was kind of what I thought. But I also think that, like, I wouldn't want to jam with, like, ace 8 suited or as a 2-pair. Ace 7, let's say. Or ace 9. I wouldn't want to be jamming with those, I don't think.
Right. I mean,
I think it's like value owning yourself, which you don't really want to do very much with the overbet.
Very, very much. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I guess the only caveat is like very, pretty kind of similar to what we were talking about earlier. Is like, I just feel like, and we've talked about this before too, is like live players are not going to find the call down, like the calls with the top X percent of their range. Like right. If villain has like pocket, like black kings here, the solver would probably say he's supposed to call a jam. Because it, like, unblocks all your bluffs, blocks your, like, a lot of your value, right? But, like, I don't think, like, I don't, I would say, like, 90% of live players are going to fold any combo of pocket kings here. Just sure. For example.
No, fair enough.
But, yeah, that said, like, maybe, like,
try to jam for max value, we're actually going to get called less than we
right.
should
be called. Maybe, right, and that's, maybe.
Interesting.
But maybe he has more ace-x than he should also. And so maybe
those hands... if you could have like random offsuit aces, I mean, we've seen it.
Exactly. So maybe that all balances out to let's just revert to, you know. Did you get a, sort of a thought from the solver?
The solver is doing a split sizing. It's taking 3/4 pot with most of its range. I mean, first of all, it's checking, obviously. It's checking back, you know, lots of hands. Mm-hmm. But it's taking a 3/4 pot sizing when it's with most of its bets are for 3/4, but it is with a small percentage of the range, it is jam.
And what are those hands? Are those like, is ace, I mean, I guess it said we should fold, if we had like ace 3 of hearts, would it jam?
It's jamming all ace 3.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know we shouldn't have ace 3 of spades. Oh no, we did check back.
Yeah, we checked. Yeah. It's so, jamming all ace 3, it's jamming all ace king. And it's jamming, and then for bluffs, it's jamming, they're all king, basically any king X that's unpaired.
With no hearts? With hearts? Like, does it matter what the suits are?
Without... Actually, the suits are kind of there's not really, like, any rhyme or reason to them. That's
okay. Yeah, that happens.
So it's just basically doing a lot of overbet jamming as a bluff with unpaired kings, which is kind of curious to me. I'm not sure I understand that, really. I guess because it blocks ace-king.
And I think it's worth probably checking the preflop ranges and just seeing how much ace-king it gives our opponent. Because I do think that, like, even in a vacuum, you're not supposed to 4-bet ace-king all the time.
Opponent has very little ace-king here, and you have to think that that's because they checked to us on the river.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. So that actually doesn't really explain it. So I'm not sure I really understand overbet jamming a king. I don't really think I get that, so...
Right.
Maybe someone in the comments, if you can think of why we would overbet jam an unpaired king as a bluff on this run out, let us know. Educate us. But anyway, we did jam and we got a snap fold. Villain claims they had ace-six suited. We got ownaged.
Maybe, if he was telling the truth. Yeah, it's always in. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with jamming, because if you don't have good reads, especially if you don't have good reads on an opponent, I think defaulting to balance is the right play. I just know that, like, again, I'm kind of, it's this exact similar to your first hand where we talked about, like, overbet jamming, where I'm kind of thinking about what Bart would say, which is, like, you know, players are just going to fold so much to jams that, like, when you have value, it often, it's such an exploit. It's so exploitative. It's so exploitable. But, like, that's okay. At these stakes, but you know.
Yeah, I will say though, I mean, players pay off jams more than you think, though. Like,
yeah, for
example, your hand that you exhibit being a great example of that.
Well, and that's true too. And I mean, and that's a fair point that, you know, we have 160 here, and if we bet 80 versus betting 160, we can get called half as much and still have the same EV if we jam. And maybe that's the case. I mean, that's and
maybe we're actually getting called, like, maybe it's only folding out like a few hands.
Right, you know? Exactly. So that's the other thing to think of is, you know, if your other sizing would be like 3/4 pot versus a jam, we do only need to get called half as much by jamming to make it profitable, to make it more profitable. Obviously, it's going to be profitable either way because we just binked the best card in the deck.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, yeah, anyway, I thought it was a pretty interesting one.
I think so too. I think that's really cool.
All right, everybody. Well, you've spent another hour with us. We always appreciate that. We really do. And we're very excited to see what Bart Hansen has to say about Josh's play. We're sure it will be entirely complimentary. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, have a good one, guys. Thanks for listening.